Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
Now, I frequently said in terms of life that failure is not falling down, failure is staying down. However, our next guest and author of the week has gone a little bit further with respect to his passion for life and so on, and indeed has also introduced not the concept of energy vampires. We've spoken about those on the Midweek Drive Live before, of course, but three types of human mosquitoes: the bloodsucker, the invisible suffocator, and the pitta, or PITA. All this and more we will be talking about over the next 30 or so minutes as we welcome our official author of the week to the program today. Of course, it's the awesome John Miles. How are you, John?
Alex and Anna, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's such an honor to be here and talking to you across the pond.
Well, indeed so. So whereabouts in the States are you? Let's just clarify that to start off with.
I live in the Tampa Bay area. For people from England, they probably know where Disney World is. So we're about an hour and a half west of Orlando.
One of our growing bands of Floridians from that point of view. Kathy Manso would be pleased to actually know that. And of course, Mike Dooley is also a regular from the Florida zone, another key person when it comes to life coaching. John, let's cut to the quick. Speaker, author, show host, founder, chief executive officer, and Navy veteran. Now, any one of those particular lines might be seen as, well, that's more than sufficient, etc. But talk us through your whole process from being a decorated Navy veteran to obviously becoming an inspiration now for the world.
Yeah, Alex, it's been quite the journey. And I, looking back, would have told you what I'm doing now. I couldn't imagine in a million years doing 20 years ago. But I ended up graduating from the Naval Academy. And I had a fantastic journey in the Navy. I got to serve in some combat zones, did counter drug operations, et cetera. And it was in that last duty that I had doing counter drug interdictions that I was really immersed with our DEA here in the States, Drug Enforcement Agency, Customs, FBI, CIA, you name it. And so they all approached me and said, why don't you apply to do our line of work for a living? And so I ended up picking the FBI, and I was literally days away from my Quantico class when it was the first time this had ever happened. Congress couldn't pass a budget. Now we see it all the time. But it caused my class to get recycled and had a permanent ripple effect on the rest of my career, because what I thought was going to turn into a couple months became almost 4 years later before the class became available. And at that point, I had to move on to a plan B and was a management consultant at that point in time. So I had another life event, unpredictable one, happened to me when I was a Big Four consultant. I was at Arthur Andersen at Houston in the epicenter, right when the whole Enron collapse happened. And so I literally went from having this huge book of business, being a practice leader, to almost overnight having to find a new job. And so I decided I'd had enough of consulting. I pivoted into industry. And this is where I first really got into global operations. I went to work for a company called Lendlease. For people in the UK, you probably know their subsidiary Bovis, the construction company. And so I spent a ton of time in Covent Garden and Harrow, along with Australia. And then from there, went to Lowe's Home Improvement. From Lowe's Home Improvement, I was recruited to go to Dell as a CIO and left Dell to become the COO of a marketing company and then the CEO of a software company. So that's kind of the professional apparatus I went to. And it was quite the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can sense, obviously, there are people saying, you know, if there's, as you say, in that opening introduction to the whole sequence, life can be disheartening if you're just cruising along without purpose or motivation. And people might be listening to that saying, I can't do what I need, half of what John Miles has actually done. Let's open it up a little bit for questions before we actually dig a little bit deeper. And let's turn to your side of the pond, actually, not in Tampa Bay, but a little bit further north than that, actually in North Carolina. We have Jessica Burtis. Jessica, any questions you'd like to put to our inspirational writer about his book, Passion Struck, of course, officially 12 Powerful Principles to Unlock Your Purpose and Ignite Your Most Intentional Life. Jessica, over to you.
Well, I have so many questions, but I thought one of them that I would like to talk about is the idea that you can reinvent yourself at any age and you can have new passions and goals. And I think that's very relevant right now when we kind of live in a, flash in the pan social media age. So I was really curious about your thoughts on that.
So, Jessica, thank you so much. And I used to live in Mooresville, just outside of Charlotte, which is where Lowe's is headquartered. So, thank you for
That's
joining.
awesome.
And it's interesting. I was at a Naval Academy alumni meeting last night, and I was discussing the book. And as I was getting into describing, it's all about crafting your ideal life. One of the older graduates who was there, probably in his early 70s, said, "Well, this book doesn't apply to me." And I stopped him right there and I said, "There's no time in life where you don't have the opportunity to reinvent yourself and to seek becoming the best person that you could be." And it's interesting because Tom Gilovich, a professor at Cornell, did research with people in their third quadrant of life. And he ended up examining thousands of them. And the amazing thing to me is he found that 76% of them had the same regret. And that regret was not pursuing their ideal self. It wasn't the mistakes, it was the what ifs and should haves. So I think this constant reinvention is something that not only can a young person do, but you can do it at any age. And one of the most interesting people I focus in the book is on Dan Schwabel, who's a New York Times bestselling author. He's also the partner and research director for Future Workplace. And he has done comparable research to me. He's examined about 1,200 what he calls remarkable individuals. I've examined about 750. We both found the same thing. These people who seem to pursue their life goal of really at all stages of their life, achieving fulfillment, all had one thing in common, and that is the consistent pursuit of reinvention. And so it's something that sounds so easy to do, but so many people have huge struggles doing it. So I appreciate the question and really think that it's something, especially in the age of automation, AI, et cetera, that we all need to get very good at because AI is going to evolve and we need to evolve ourselves, both professionally and personally, with that train that's left the station.
Do you think that perspectives on that have changed over time? I like how you called it also the third quadrant of life. I think that sounds a lot better than the third stage of life. So, but yeah, just over time, do you think that the views on when you can change your life have has it gotten better? Do you think it's getting worse?
Well, I think as lifespan and health spans are increasing, and especially people's health spans, which is how long you live a healthy life in conjunction with your lifespan. The longer that we feel that health span, the more it gives us the energy and feeling that we want to explore these things. So I think it is something that can increase, especially with modern science and modern medicine. But to me, all of this comes down to the choices we make. I don't care if you're a teenager or someone my dad's age at 86. Everything comes down fundamentally to our actions and our choices. And are they in alignment with whatever age you're at, the aspirations, ambitions that you have for that stage in life?
Speaking of aspirations, of course, in a matter of 24 hours from now, Anna Koskinen will be taking part in a special sleepover at the University of at Lincoln Cathedral in a cardboard box to actually raise awareness of homelessness issues. Anna, I'm sure you've got lots of questions with respect to what John's been talking about with Jessica so far. So over to you, please.
Yes, actually, I was looking at your book and everything, and one thing you underline in your book is that we should embrace discomfort in order to be able to better ourselves and develop ourselves. What would you recommend to someone that is ready to take that step but is afraid and doesn't have, is afraid of not having that safety net to hold them? What is your main advice for someone that's, I don't know, moving to a new country to study, for example?
Well, that is definitely a life change. So, are you saying that they're moving there or they're contemplating moving there?
Moving, actually moving.
Yes, I remember when I moved to Spain and then when I moved to Australia. I mean, both times there was a part of me that was absolutely petrified of what I was going to encounter, especially going to Spain where I wasn't fluent in the language. But I've kind of flipped it to, I have this one challenge that's in my way of having just an incredible time and an incredible opportunity to learn. And on the flip side of that, look at all the amazing things that I'm going to get to experience, culture, people from different parts of the world, seeing things through a different perspective than I'm seeing now, experiencing different ways of living life. So I kind of always take the counter view. I don't look at things as much as the negativity that these things might present. I look at more of it as the opportunity that they have on expanding not only your mindset, but the overall way that you interact with the world and the connections that you form.
I think it's really interesting because I moved from Romania to the UK, and for me it was quite a big change. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. And what you were saying about not knowing the language, I think that was a really big criteria for me for choosing UK because it's English. But moving forward, you said you worked as a CIO, CEO, COO. And did all these three are three different areas of expertise. And I wanted to ask you, are you more keen on the financial side or more on the overall executive and having an overview of everything that's going on in a company or business?
I am definitely not someone who lives in spreadsheets. I was more, my strengths are more on the innovation, creativity, seeing the big picture, and being a person who knows how to lead people and get them to do things because they want to do it and they feel motivated and a sense of mattering in the jobs that they're doing. So I'm definitely not, the CFO type, I'm more of the big thinker type.
Every business needs someone that is able to know a bit of everything, but to be on the creative side and think outside of the box. So I think that is great.
Let's move back to those three types of human mosquito, which, as you might have gathered, John, quite fascinates me in terms of, as I say, we've talked about the fact that in some senses, some folk would say that we all have a little bit of the human vampire in us. We all kind of suck energy out of the room and the energy. But how did you come up with, as I say, the three particular categories of the bloodsucker, the invisible suffocator, and of course the pitta, PITA?
Well, Alex, as I was creating the book and the principles kind of build upon each other, the first one starts with this concept of becoming a mission angler, which is really life crafting the ideal life that you want for yourself. I then go into the topic of reinvention, which we've already covered. But once you start living your life differently and you're reinventing aspects of yourself, it's only natural that the people you interact with are going to see a changed version of yourself, and that can be threatening to people. It's also going to change the environments that you put yourself in, especially if you're on the path to improving yourself. So, what often gets in the way are the invisible influences that we encounter in our life. And as I was thinking about writing this chapter, I had just read Jonah Berger's book, Invisible Influences, a professor at University of Pennsylvania Wharton. And I was thinking about how do I articulate this point in a creative way? And I happened to be listening to a radio show, and the announcer came on and said, "Audience, what is the most dangerous animal on the planet?" And people started calling in, and the answers were sharks and spiders and jellyfish and
It's a
this
human
and
being.
that. And it turns out the mosquito kills more people in a year than all the sharks together will in 100 years. It's somewhere between 1.5 million and 2 million deaths per year. And
Siren Radio. What a scenario without Siren Radio. Stand up, everyone, save our siren sounds. From Lincoln to Miami, Paris to LA, our global community wants to hear it play. Siren Radio. Let them all create, students participate. Keep on keeping on, save our Siren Radio.
Yeah, so to me, when I started thinking about this concept of mosquitoes and how they're being invisible, the same thing goes with human mosquitoes in our life. So I decided to come up with three of them to articulate the point and give readers something that they can look for. The first, as you mentioned, is the bloodsucker. And you can think of this as a boundary destroyer. These are people who want to draw every ounce of blood that they can. They often ignore your personal or professional boundaries. They make demands of your time. They question your decisions. And they give you unsolicited advice that ends up making you feel undermined and disrespected. The invisible suffocator are known for their negative outlook. These are the pessimists who are constantly complaining. They're that aunt or uncle at your Christmas meal who you share this great life event with. And all they can do is tell you the negatives about it and how it's going to impact your life in profoundly adverse ways. And then the PETA, which some people call a piece of work, I like to call it a pain in the ass. These are those people in your life who thrive on drama and conflict. They ignite disputes, they gossip, they create tension and discomfort, and they really just create havoc in your life. And so what I like to say is, once you identify bloodsucker, invisible suffocators, and PETAs in your life, you can take the exercise of just looking at an archery target and maybe thinking of 10, 15 people in your life who are in concentric circles closest to you to a little bit away from you. And do any of these three types of mosquitoes resonate with those people? If so, it's a great gift because now you know that these mosquitoes exist in your life and you have the opportunity to swat them away or put boundaries in place to deal with them.
How important are baby steps in terms of the sequence? I mean, that's a term which we've frequently used in terms of you don't expect to literally within 12 hours suddenly become a whole new individual. In fact, many people would actually say that might be too drastic, and as time is an illusion, perhaps we've got that. But actually taking those key small steps to actually change, and then you actually notice over a period of time, then change does manifest itself for you.
Yeah, it's a great question. And in the third portion of the book, I cover something that I call the psychology of progress. And one of the chapters, I profile Elon Musk and a concept that I call the bee and the turtle effect. Because to your point, we need to operate as if we're a bee. A bee is very much focused on what their tasks are in the given moment. And they're taking those small incremental steps daily to make the hive a better place. But you also need to have the long-term perspective of tortoise to understand where you want to go in life. So to me, it's really mirroring both approaches and being aligned in the actions that you're taking, that they align with your aspirations and your ambitions.
And I have to, again, just go to this other concept, which is the pinball life, which I must admit currently, and indeed for a few years, once feel as though, yeah, you just bounced from pillar to post. And you sort of wonder, what, where, what just happened? What the flip?
Yeah, this was actually the last chapter I wrote, and I think it's one of the most important ones. It's on this whole concept of how do we consciously engage? Because we often hear the metaphor that we're living on autopilot, which I think is fine. I mean, it basically means we're doing the same things over and over again. But as I started to really look at this in human behavior, I think it's the wrong metaphor for how many of us live our lives. Because when we're on autopilot, we're still typically going in a direction. Oftentimes, when the pilot puts the destination in, hopefully They're putting in the destination that we want to go to. However, I think more people are living their lives like a pinball. They're so distracted by the world around them. They're engaged subconsciously in their life, and they're just bouncing off the different things without being intentional about their actions, their focus, and how they're prioritizing the most important things in their life. And it's an easy thing to look upon and think, I need to keep the main thing, but it's so easy to say, so difficult to do. And an easy exercise that a listener can do is, if you want to know what's driving your behavior, the two things that you need to look at are your calendar and your pocketbook, because where you're spending your time and where you're investing your money is typically where you're focusing your attention. And so I like to say, for things in your life, if it's urgent and important, you should be doing it. If it's not urgent and it's not important, it should go away. But you can put them in a 4x4 quadrant. But the simplest thing to think about is, what is your pocketbook and what is your calendar telling you about how you're living your life? And that will tell you whether you're living it as a pinball or whether you're intentional about the pursuits that you long to achieve.
I suspect, given your Navy background, you may well sort of say, are you crazy with respect to these dietary questions? But then again, you probably actually have heard, being not too far away from North Carolina, of what we officially refer to on the Author of the Week feature as Jessica Burtis's nutrition question. So, Jessica, would you like to put the two nutrition questions to John? Over to you, please.
I would love to. And, you know, considering you lived in Mooresville, I feel like I'm hopeful for this. But I was wondering, have you ever tried sweet tea or boiled peanuts?
Oh, I've obviously had both. So,
excellent.
So my folks have lived in Tennessee now for almost 40 years, and sweet tea is a staple in Tennessee as it is in Carolina. And I've had boiled chestnuts and peanuts several times. Some of the best that I've ever had were actually in Italy, where I got to taste them over Christmas one year.
It's gone global. I'm glad to hear that.
John, you've just made a North Carolina citizen very, very happy on that sort of response. You know, week in, week out is diligent scenario. It's very good indeed. Anna, any thoughts from yourself?
I'm thinking so many things actually about this, because it's so interesting and so useful on so many levels. But I'm going to go back a bit to the mosquitoes. And by the way, I'm so happy we named them mosquitoes and not vampires, because us Romanians were tired of
it. It's sensitivity, Transylvania, Romania.
Sorry. Well, I was thinking, we all have these types of people in our lives. And I was just thinking, sometimes maybe we are them. Wouldn't it be easier to set some boundaries with all of these people in order not to get to the point where they become those kind of like sucking the energy out of us? Because I think this way is easier, because you know up until what point that person you can relate with and you can have a conversation with, up until what point, and after that it's just gonna go south. So do you think it's a good idea, after we put all those people in our lives, we put them in those three categories, to just think of some boundaries to establish with them in order to have better relations?
No, that's absolutely the key to it. So it's a great question. And I mean, one boundary is the most extreme, which is they're causing so much pain in your life that no matter what you try, you're going to have to distance yourself from them. And that's the most unfortunate step you have to take. But I think the first step that you need to do, or anyone would need to do, is you got to identify your limits. It starts by understanding what your limits are and what behaviors or environments drain your energy. Is it constant interruptions? Is it negative office gossip? And with that, you have to consider your emotional and mental limits. How much stress can you possibly handle before your mental health is impacted? And once you identify the limits, it's so important to have self-care and acknowledge that they're legitimate and worth protecting. The next step is then you have to really communicate them clearly to the people involved, because it's key that you establish the boundaries by stating your limits in some way. It could be through the way that you're interacting with them, or it could be more direct than that. But if you're going to have that conversation, then you need to understand the rationale behind them and how to articulate that to someone else, so it helps them understand your perspective and makes them more likely to respect your boundaries. I think after that, what a lot of us fail to do is we're not consistent in enforcing the boundaries. And when that happens and people see us waffling, they tend to double down on the actions that we want them to stop to begin with. So if you're consistent, you're really setting a clear message about your limits and you're helping others to adjust their expectations. And then lastly, as I mentioned before, setting boundaries is all about self-care. It's really about recognizing your worth and giving yourself permission to prioritize your well-being.
I think it's really important, because personally, I hate confrontation, and I used to hate having to tell people, look, this bothers me, can you please stop? But I noticed that up until you say something and you actually show people that you're ready to cut them out of your life, they'll continue doing that. And I think it's really good there are people like you out there that explain to people why it's okay to do it, and that show people that everybody is worthy of having a good life and good people around them and a healthy mental health and lifestyle.
Thank you. I think it's just critical to put this in place, or you're not going to achieve your life goals. It's as simple as that. You either put these boundaries in place, get these influences manageable, or they're going to impact every aspiration that you have and derail them.
Yes. Also, may I just add that when you said about that table in with urgent activities, important activities, urgent and important, I think that's many more people should actually be aware of this way of dividing the important things in your life and the things you have to do, because you know the same example is giving like with stones, and you have those little stones that fill up the entire glass and you don't have any place for the big stones. And I think the people that know that with what we're talking about know that these things should be taught more often, because we get to a point where we have only little stones in our lives, the unimportant and urgent things, and that's how our mental health gets affected in time.
John, with over 27 million downloads, with over 32,000 five-star reviews, and being listened to in over 169 countries, you'd almost think it was a spreadsheet from a business, basically. We actually have to turn to Passion Struck in the top 0.01% of podcasts globally, and with new episodes dropping every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Share with us, in terms of obviously the development and the phenomenon of podcasts, and we've been podcasting ourselves since 2009, etc. Is this something which actually does help? It actually gives choice to the listener in terms of, as well as radio shows like this, which obviously are important, you can also develop that other additional thing of portability on demand, which of course is where the iPod emerged from in the first place.
Yeah, I think the great thing about the medium is that there are all kinds of shows that are out there. And even in the self-improvement space, there's all kinds of influencers that you can listen to. So I think what it really comes down to is the viewpoint or the lens through which the show is done, which really differentiates them. But what I like about it is if you have a conservative bent to you, there are people who are conservative out there, liberal host. My show, I try to do completely down the middle, because I'm trying not to alienate anyone, trying to help everyone. But I like it that, you know, let's face it, there are 5 million podcasts, probably close to a million that are active at any time. And so there's a lot of choice for the listener to get a whole bunch of information. And then you can also look at what format do you like? Do you like solo episodes that people do? Do you like shorter episodes? Do you like longer interview style? And do you like comedy? Do you like sports talk? So it really just comes down to what are you passionate about?
the joys of democratization, the media. You could probably even have a podcast with Biden and Trump, although maybe not. Perhaps so. Well, probably still be well listened to. Jessica, any other thoughts from yourself?
I could find the unmute button. well, I was curious about your plans for the rest of March and April. The whole rest of the year, honestly, it's going by so fast.
So one of the big plans that I have coming up is the publishing industry, especially audiobooks, was put on hold for a bit because one of the biggest producers of audiobooks was acquired. And so it delayed my audiobook for getting out in the world. So I have to go to Atlanta here in the near future to actually record the book, which I'm quite excited about, but it's going to be kind of an arduous 4 days of doing it, because for anyone who's used to doing solo episodes of podcasts or lots of talking, you get tired after a while. So I've got to read about 100,000 words. So it's going to take some effort to keep the energy level up high. And then I have to get my first colonoscopy coming up at the end of March. So I'm not sure if I'm dreading it or looking forward to it, but I hear the liquid that you have to take is much worse than the procedure itself, which you're knocked out for. But
it's where your naval training will probably come in useful.
And then I have another thing that I'm really excited about. I've been wanting to interview two people forever. And I've gone out to both of them and I get rejected and rejected and rejected. And they both said yes in the same month. So I am interviewing Bronnie Ware, who is an Australian who writes about her dealings with people in palliative care and the regrets of dying. And then I also have Gabby Bernstein coming on the podcast, who I just love the way she does meditations, mindfulness, and is more recently talking about self-worth. So really excited to get those two things recorded as well.
And are there any musical influences or any music you like to listen to kind of psych yourself up for the next 100,000 words or indeed colonoscopy scenarios that you're faced with?
So I absolutely adore music, and I like all kinds of music, everything from classical music to metal to 70s rock to 90s alternative to Irish music to really over the weekend we were listening to blues and some jazz. I actually have a distant relative from England who shares the same name as me, John Miles. I own several of his albums, and he's the reason I have to use a middle initial because I can't break his SEO. But I've been listening recently to a lot of the tracks from the Waterboys, who are kind of a famous Irish band. And I've also kind of been doubling down on some of the 80s new wave recently, listening to Echo and the Bunnymen and some Smiths and a little bit of Joy Division, who I thought could have been one of the best bands ever had their lead singer not perished.
So in essence, music is your first love. You might actually say that people will have actually seen the shadow. Somebody else would have seen the whole of the moon. And then looking at the killing moon, moving straight the way, obviously, into Love Will Tear Us Apart, which is wonderful, really, on that sort of basis. So worth considering. John, we've got two final questions to put to you on what's been a fantastic and fascinating insight. Actually, three. First of all, how can people actually follow your good self on the various socials, on the media, if people actually want to find out details about how they can actually not just listen to Passion Struck, the podcast, but also get hold of a copy of Passion Struck by your good self, John R. Miles. What's the easiest way to go through that?
So the best two ways to find about me are my two websites. My personal website is johnrmiles.com, and the company website is passionstruck.com. From there, you can get access to everything from to the podcast, the book. The way that the book is available right now in the UK is through Amazon. So unfortunately, it's not being distributed there. I hope that's going to change, because recently it's been picked up in Korea and Bulgaria. And starting to be picked up in other countries, but that would be the way to do it at this point.
And those final two questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on this, your midweek drive, Author of the Week debut? Has it been good for you?
Ah, this has been fascinating, and I like the global team of interviewers that you have.
Well, the next critical question is, can we prevail upon you to join us again? Will you come back sometime and keep us appraised of some more of those 12 key principles which will unlock our purpose and ignite our most intentional lives?
I would love to. We cover just a small bit of the book, so always more to discuss.
Well, John R. Miles, we salute you. Take care. Thanks to Anna, of course, and Jessica as ever. And keep on living your best self, John.
Thank you. It was such an honor to be here.
Music was my first love, and it will be my last. Music of the future, and music of the past. To live without my music would be impossible to do. In this world of troubles, my music pulls me through.
to Siren Radio. What a scenario without Siren Radio. Turn up everyone, save a siren sound. Siren Radio. From Lincoln to Miami, Paris to LA, our global community wants to hear it play. Students participate, keep on keeping up, keep on keeping up.
Siren Radio,
keep on keeping up.
Siren Radio,
keep on keeping up.
Siren Radio,
keep on keeping up. Say Siren Radio.
Thick and thin, he will wait until you give your Siren Radio.
What a scenario with that siren radio. Stand up, everyone, save our siren sound. From Lincoln to Miami, Paris to LA, our global community wants to hear it play.
Siren Radio.
Let them all create students participate. Keep on keeping on. Save our siren radio.